I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I'm a human, and I'm coming. I'm animated. I'm alive. My heart's big. It's got hot blood going through it fast. I like to fight, too. I like to eat. I like to have children. I'm here. I got a life force. This is a human. This is what we look like. This is what we act like. This is what everybody was like before us. This is what I am. I'm a throwback. I'm here. I've got the fire of human liberty. I'm setting fires everywhere, and humans are turning on everywhere.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode on Get Up The Yard. I'm Dunny, I'm back this week, I'm your MC of sorts, and this week I'm joined by the eclectic mix of Frank and Sean. So Frank, have you got over your turbo trots this week?
I have. Back
good and solid.
Solids. Yeah.
That's a great way to start, isn't it? Getting good there. How about you, Sean? Good and solid?
Yeah, very good. Can't complain.
No.
Are you a regular man, Sean?
Yeah, I would say I'm quite regular, yeah. Except when I have a bunch of the old turbos, but
once or twice a day.
I'd say once.
Evening or morning. Yeah. Evening or morning.
Evening.
Yeah. Similar. Frank. Similar to myself.
Frank's an expert here, like, you know.
What about yourself?
I eat lots of protein. I know it looks you say like, oh, you're eating all your corn and stuff. I consume a lot of protein, so it's just one big happy dump a day.
Gorgeous.
Oh man, I tell you what, absolutely fantastic. Just boom, bosh, gone. Absolutely sorted. But yeah, first thing in the morning, have a protein, cereal, cup of black coffee, fucking ready to go, man. Then about an hour later, comes out, and I am a brand new man. Well, enough of this shit talk, literally. yeah, we don't have Dave. He was too busy putting 50 euro notes in Hooker's G-strings last night, so he's under a rock somewhere. And obviously, Luxie's away.
A weekend for Dave.
Bit of a weekend. So if you're listening, Dave, hello. And obviously, Luxie's away on a speaking tour of the continent with his his poison. And of course, no matter how many times you say,
appearance.
Frank keeps his vibration on his phone. Thanks for that, Frank. Lovely stuff. Right, lads, there's only one place to start. We're going to talk a little bit about football, Sean, so I do apologise. I'll try and get you in a bit more this week than the lads did last week. I still love you. I know the other lads don't. Of course, I wasn't around last week, and we were talking about international football, but the Premier League and the Champions League made its appearance again. Frank, only one place to start for you, really. I personally forgot Riyad Mahrez actually played for Man City. When it popped up on my phone that you scored, I thought it was Leicester. So you were happy. Were you happy with the result yesterday, especially, you know, with the misery of the midweek?
Well, yeah. Obviously, the performance and the result midweek was a scare. But they did bounce back very well. However, you know, against, I think, arguably, and what will eventually be proven to be the worst team in the league in Cardiff. They do have a bit of physicality, but in terms of, you know, a perfect game for City to bounce back and get their confidence back, they couldn't have handpicked a better team to be up against. So, you know, although it was an eye-catching result, 5-0, there was some brilliant passages of play and some great goals and performances. You know, you have to take it with a pinch of salt. City, despite some eye-catching results against Cardiff and Huddersfield, haven't had a particularly good start to the season. They probably, outside of Arsenal on the opening day, haven't really hit the heights of last season. And, you know, when you do that, when you come in kind of at 50-60%, you can get away with it in the Premier League for the most part. But, you know, against decent teams in Europe who have international caliber players like Memphis Depay and Fekir and a couple of the young French lads that Lyon do have, then you get punished. So, yeah, kind of a topsy-turvy week for City. Thankful that they have an easy enough group, because otherwise it could have been a very serious dint. However, they, you know, they're unlike last season where they kind of won their first four/five Champions League games and could afford to send a weakened team out to Ukraine. And, you know, that's a very important week off in and around November to have. They've probably lost that now, because they'll probably have to go full tilt to the end of the group stage. So, yeah, you know, topsy-turvy week for City, but, you know, still fancy them to get through the group and still only 2 points behind Liverpool. So, can't complain too much.
No, I didn't see a lot of football myself. I was watching the match of the day, and, you know, I mean, Cardiff are poor, aren't they? But they know that they're poor. They don't have a lot. They have Stephen Warnock, obviously a very old school manager, very good coach as well. I think they'll just take that in their stride, 5-0, and they got trounced by Chelsea last week. And, you know, they still have it's Cardiff, as you say. It's the last team. It's the worst team in the league by a mile. But yeah, the real big tests are going to come up. And a lot of the players, though, were, from what I got of it, they seem to be quite confident, very happy. I thought Sané's tweet was a little bit fanciful, saying that, oh, we're back again on fire. I'm thinking, it's Cardiff City, mate, you know? Calm down a little bit. But yeah, I understand why it's very important. Belief is very important. Morale is very important. And of course, you play the sort of game that Guardiola likes and the modern coach likes. You have to have good morale there. Speaking of Liverpool, too, who are the 2 points behind the top of the league, 6 wins out of 6. I don't know. According to David Moyes on Golden Sunday, apparently this isn't the best Liverpool team he's seen in a while. The team with Torres, Mascherano, Gerrard and Alonso is better than this team, even though they've no Liverpool team has actually won the first 6 games ever, even the top teams of yesteryear. What do you make of Davy Moyes? He just won't give Liverpool any credit, will he? He's still very bitter. Do you think this is the best Liverpool team you've seen you in your lifetime?
It's very hard to say 6 games into a season. Oh. Like, you know, I do, as much as I kind of, you know, don't like to agree with David Moyes, you know, I think there is some, you know, I don't think it's outrageous to say that Liverpool team was the best. Now, obviously, if this team go on and win the league, that will absolutely shatter that myth. But, you know, I remember that Liverpool team, and I don't remember many teams in the Premier League at any stage having a better midfield than Alonso, Mascherano and Gerrard. You know, if you look at City's midfield that was so dominant last season, it was almost a mirror image of that. You know, you had Fernandinho, who was very like Mascherano, you had De Bruyne, who was very like Gerrard, and you had Silva, who was very like Xabi Alonso. You know, so time will tell. Like, you know, certainly what I would say is that with that team and Torres up front, it was formidable. However, I think the big difference with Liverpool, this Liverpool team against the other one, is how solid they appeared defensively. I think it was their 8th home clean sheet in a row in the Premier League. You know, so, you know, probably not the most outrageous thing David Moyes has ever said, go on.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I mean, that's just, I loathe to think, you know, to agree with David Moyes. He's such a bitter little person, isn't he? You know, when he took over the United job, I was around going on, oh, you know, they say he was moaning about the fixtures and, you know, oh, these fixtures, they say they come from a computer. I'm not convinced of that. Steady on, you know. But yeah, no, I remember that Liverpool team. They had great balance, great equilibrium in the centre with Alonso and Mascherano. Beautiful combination. They were really good, you know, ball winner, ball player. And Gerrard was the energy behind Torres. And he linked up beautifully. Just never kicked on, unfortunately. But this Liverpool team, though, that does seem to be the difference, that they've actually kicked on. The club seems to be in a healthy enough financial position. I must give credit to the owners that, obviously, I was very anti New England Sports Ventures beforehand, but I must admit they there is a method now. You know, we've stopped selling our best players this year. We've kept Salah, Mane and Firmino seem to be linking up quite nicely. We haven't got going yet. We're grinding out results. Obviously, that game was over in the first half. You know, we're bringing Shaqiri in. It's starting to look a lot nicer, but the big test is going to be Chelsea next Saturday. It's the 5:30 kickoff at Stamford Bridge. If we beat, if we get a draw, if we don't lose at Chelsea, I'll be very happy with that. Who obviously are also unbeaten as well. They drew today 0-0 at West Ham, as we probably be a little bit disappointed with that. But yeah, I'd be very happy with the result. I think if we beat Chelsea, that will definitely raise, that might get the bandwagon up again. And I know Luxy will loathe me to say this, but if we do beat Chelsea, that'd be a huge result. A huge win next week. I wish he was on. I really do. So I could hear him spew his poison.
In fairness, you know, if you look at Man City last season, they were in a very similar position where they were blowing teams away in the kind of first few games of the season. Obviously, they drew Everton in the second game and kind of scraped past Bournemouth. But other than that, they were destroying teams. They beat Liverpool and 5-0 and Watford 6-0, and you know, the first acid test, because whatever you say about Chelsea, they always are kind of an acid test of a team. The City then around this time as well played Chelsea and absolutely destroyed them. It was the most convincing 1-0 score you'll ever see, and I think that's when people start saying, you know what, actually this team can win the league. You know, they're not just going to blow away. They're not just flat track bullies. They're going to do this to everyone. So I do agree that it will be a big test of Liverpool's character. And I've said this before about this team, particularly as they were going to play Man United at the back end of last season, how important games like this is. And, you know, unfortunately, Liverpool under Klopp have failed a lot of their big tests. So it is, you know, there will be obviously other tasks like Man United away and things like that will pose threats to Liverpool's character. But certainly you get the feeling that next Saturday is huge for Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. I will be watching that. It kind of reminds me when 2009, when we put a very substantial bid for the Premier League title challenge, when we went to Chelsea and beat them 1-0. I remember it was a Xavi Alonso goal, and we actually broke Chelsea's home record. I remember they hadn't lost a home game since Mourinho had taken over. Now Mourinho wasn't a manager at that point, you know, at that time. So I remember just thinking, it's kind of weird. It's similar. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to dream, Frank. You know, but I don't want to get. I'm not saying it's our year this year, right? Or that, but yeah, it's very. And speaking of Mourinho, actually. Before the 0-0 draw, I don't know if you're reading it online, they were going on about how Mourinho's finally cracked it and all this kind of did you read about that nonsense? Apparently he's cracked it, and it was after the Champions League game away to Young Boys in Switzerland, and he was saying just a few pundits were coming out and saying that Mourinho's finally got the hang of it and he's now adopting a style and all this stuff. I remember looking at that thinking that's utter nonsense. Did you see anything like that?
No, I didn't, but I kind of actively avoid the commentary on Mourinho because it tends to be just extreme, either extremely positive or extremely negative. And you'll probably see that this week, you know, huge negativity after the 1-1 draw with Wolves. But yeah, I mean, certainly I didn't see it, but if there was kind of premature back clapping and or whatever, then you got to really take that with a pinch of salt. Anyone can see that this Man United team is frail. And, you know, because of the talent in the group and because of Mourinho's, you know, let's be honest, he is a dated coach, but he still has the ability in one-off games to set up a team, get a result, because of his kind of craftiness and know-how. So, you know, although anytime they're on the ropes, Mourinho's United, they do seem to pull out a couple of results. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you kind of get the feeling, so, oh, is it clicking? But then you see them yesterday, and, you know, they're being outplayed by Wolves. Not that Wolves are, you know, Wolves aren't, you know, I know they're a promoted team, but they're certainly, you know, a very accomplished team. gave City a real run for their money as well. But yeah, like the commentary about Mourinho just seems to be, regardless whether it's positive or negative, it just seems to be over the top. So I didn't see it. Had I have, I probably wouldn't have read it either, because
it was Richard Dunn.
Well, then I definitely wouldn't have read it.
he said it. It was on. There's a bit here on the independence.ie, and yeah, he's going on saying how he sorted all the problems out and all this kind of stuff. And it was after the 3-0 win, you know, Young Boys burn. And he was going on about how he finally sorted out. I suppose it's the way things are now. Everything's just so reactive these days, isn't it? You know, instead of actually looking at it and making a comment after maybe, you know, 10 games and say, look, this just isn't working. I mean, we've been saying it for a while here about Mourinho, but, you know, obviously you have to judge a manager on the season, you know, so, but yeah, you're right. It's just pure nonsense. So yeah, that's what he said. And then they get absolutely battered by Wolves at home. Maybe that's why Dave isn't on the podcast this week, Frank.
Possibly. He was very proactive. Well, not very proactive, but he was throwing sly digs in on Wednesday night, and then was sheepishly quiet yesterday. But that's the Man United way that you hear
it.
About.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Very contradictory. Yeah, he went on. I cannot wait when we get him back and when Liverpool play Manchester United soon enough. He was giving it. He was giving it the large one, as you say over here.
He was he was fair ripping you out of it. I know people listening won't really know what the content of that was, but he was you were obviously saying that, was it the results against, was it PSG or was it against someone else? I don't know.
Yeah,
it was a great result, and looks he kind of lost it and ripped you in.
He did. Well, he tried to, you know. He made himself sound a little bit mental, a bit like Rafa Benitez, you know, before the Stoke game with a sheet of paper going fact. It was. I didn't even say anything. I just turned around and said, I think if I had said hiya, Luxy, he would have just like, ah, oh, fuck you, and Liverpool, Dunny. I literally just. Oh, no, I mentioned about Salah. Obviously, we had the 3-2 win. That was a weird match. We battered PSG and then somehow found ourselves 2-2. But we did have a few decisions go against us. And then we pulled it back with Firmino. And apparently when Firmino scored, Salah threw the thing down. And I just kind of hinted. Because, you know, we Liverpool fans, we always get in the neck when you turn around and say, oh, every year is going to be your year. And we get ripped out of it by Man United fans with that, who are obviously probably the biggest hypocrites ever about anything, really. And I just turned around and said, well, that was a really good, you know, I hope we are getting good results. We're taking it slow and steady. But, you know, I really hope that we don't have, you know, our front three are now arguing with themselves or something to that effect. And I think Sean asked about, oh, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, this is a team that, you know, was on the verge of winning the Premier League until a captain slipped. And then, you know, a few years before that, we had a beach ball score a goal on us at Sunderland. That's, you know, just kind of highlighting that's the sort of look we have. And that was it. Looks, he just snapped and spewed loads of stuff and said, oh, I'm sick of Liverpool fans and you lot saying this about, oh, this is a big result. And thinking, well, you have a go at us when we say it's going to be our year, when we're arrogant. And then when we're being cautious and respectful, you're having a go at us. But I can't wait. Can't wait when he gets back from his anti-UK tour, and we have a good old duke out. You'll have to host that one, Frank. You'll be back in hosting duties for that. You know,
it's fair enough. When do Man United play Liverpool?
That is an excellent question.
We can have a face-off.
Yeah, like we will. Yeah, we will. Have a press conference, Conor McGregor style. I'll just like start calling him every name under the sun, and well, that's what we do anyway in the podcast, isn't it? We just rip the shit out of each other. All right, well, we'll move a bit away from domestic football, actually. This is just, I've just seen this, actually, lads. Apparently, I've literally knew nothing about this. I think it's just been announced today. I could be wrong. Literally today it's been announced at 5 p.m. that the FAI, FA, IFA, and the FAW, or the WL, or the Welsh FA, anyway, they are actually, apparently we're all going to look to go in for a big bid for the World Cup in 2030. Have you seen that, Frank?
Yeah, it was muted that they were going to collaborate on a bid to host it. So I was aware that it was a possibility, but as you say, then if it's been confirmed, hard to know what to make of that, really. Like, but yeah.
Yeah, last week, I mean, it's been, I think it's, as Dumpy would say, it's a kite being flown. You know, there's no, do you remember the 2008 bit of Scotland, the doomed 2008 bit of Scotland, and you already had the graphic made up and all this? We haven't got to that stage yet. You know, that's my money. They're just having a feasibility study at the moment. England, you know yourself, Frank, England could host a World Cup on its own easily. It's got the infrastructure. A lot of the trains are in a state at the moment, not because of the infrastructure, because of the management of the infrastructure. Piss poor leadership in this country, but there you go. Apparently, obviously, we've got Wembley, Emirates, Old Trafford, Anfield, Etihad, St. James's Park, Stadium of Light, the City Ground, which is Nottingham Forest Ground, Villa Park, Hillsborough, Elland Road, Bristol City, apparently, their stadium, Plymouth, and MK Dons, Stadium MK. That's England's side of it. And I mean, that's a nice mix there. It goes all the way from London. That even covers the South Coast with Plymouth and or the Southwest with Plymouth. You've got Birmingham with Villa Park. You've got Nottingham City. You know, it's around that kind of Midlands. And you've got the North West with Stadium Light and St. James's Park, and the North East with Anfield, Etihad, and Old Trafford. I mean, the stadiums there are incredible. And then apparently the Welsh will obviously add the Millennium Stadium. Oh, I'm sure they could put the Cardiff Stadium there as well. It's a nice ground, and the Liberty. And of course, Scotland has Hampden, which they're looking to revamp. Who are apparently going to buy Hampden Park off Queen's Park for a paltry amount, like £5 million. We're going to take on all the debt from that stadium and all that kind of stuff. And Murrayfield as well. And obviously the Aviva in Dublin and Croke Park. So it's a hell of a list of stadiums. I cannot see how we couldn't have like an Anglo-Irish World Cup. It's definitely there, the infrastructure. I mean, England will bear most of it, or mainland Britain will obviously bear a fair amount of it. And of course, Windsor Park, which only holds 18,000, it'll need to add another 7,000 on there. And there's also they're looking to rebuild Caseman Park, the Gaelic ground, which has actually run into its own issues up there as well. But yeah, I look forward to it anyway. 2030, who knows? Anyway, right, that's enough of the football. So, you know, obviously, anyone listening, please remember we have timestamps. Sean takes the time to put timestamps on each episode. Look at them. If you don't want to listen about football, that's fine. We talk about all the other stuff. Just look through the timestamps, and then hopefully you'll find what you need. Speaking of which, Sean, you didn't get much of a look in last week. Our good friend Alex Jones is back in the news for all the wrong reasons. His little empire is crumbling around him.
Yeah, poor old Alex, yeah. The latest person to ban him has been PayPal, which I think is very suspicious that all these groups have banned poor old Alex Jones, who is really kind of, you know, just kind of a conspiracy theorist peddler, which he's not really all that negative, really, you know.
Oh.
Which I thought was very strange. What do you think yourself?
Well, I think it's a bit mad, isn't it, that he's saying that all these companies like collude with each other and all that stuff, and people say, no, you're crazy. But yeah, he's banned off Facebook. He's banned off YouTube. He's banned off YouTube, is he? Or it is YouTube, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, I think so, yeah. I think he's banned off YouTube, which is a subsidiary of Google anyway.
Yeah. And now PayPal, where he, I'd imagine, makes a lot of his money from donations, because obviously PayPal's a great way to...
Yeah, I think I was looking it up. I think it said something like 60% of his revenue comes via PayPal, because he sells a lot of stuff on his website and stuff. It just seems very odd all of a sudden that he's essentially being silenced by the big players in media and news. And, you know, it seems like he, this is conspiracy theories now, but that he's onto something.
But no one's batting an eyelid though, are they?
Well, you know, there are people talking about it, ourselves included, but, I suppose, what can you do if these, you know, I mean, they always, their defense is, well, look, we're private companies, but, you know, who can use the internet without using Google, YouTube, you know, Facebook, PayPal? They're not really private, considering they're so ubiquitous, you know, in online now.
Yeah, I mean, they said he's promoting hate. I mean, has he ever said anything? Has he ever said anything about these companies directly? Like, has he ever come out and said, "Oh, Google"? Or I mean,
no.
I would imagine.
Well, actually, no. He would have said about Google. Yeah, he would have said that they are, quieting people who are sort of to the right, you know, and thinking forward people to the left. He would have said stuff like that.
Yeah, like,
but that's not the reason, you know. For PayPal, that link, yeah, I think you sent me. They don't actually specify why they're banning him. They just said that he has said some things in the past, but they actually didn't say, "Oh, here's the reason why," because he said this. I think it's very strange.
That is mental. But yeah, I do think. I mean, I know he's a bit mental himself, bless him. And he goes on about the Illuminati and all that as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, I actually forgot to mention this the last time we were talking about him.
Right.
He was most famous for, there's this place called Bohemian Grove, and it's this kind of retreat for rich and famous and powerful people. And he, madman that he is, actually broke into this. Now, he was talking about this for years. He was saying, look, these what he calls elites meet up in this retreat, this huge big complex called Bohemian Grove. And what he says is what they do is they have all these human sacrifices, and this is where they meet to plot, you know, world events and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was talking about this, you know, obviously me saying that, you're thinking crazy, absolutely mental stuff, but didn't he actually break into the place and recorded it and actually had footage of what they claim was a mock sacrifice? Footage is, you know, he actually has all this proof of it. And they kind of, it is a bit odd, you know, that
the
craziest conspiracy theory you could ever come up with. And fucker already has footage. What the fuck is that vibrating?
Why is that vibrating, Frank? Are you sticking your phone up your arse again, Frank?
No, it's not me.
I don't know. You're a bit slow to react to that, Frank. Well, just saying.
But it does seem that they all are what seem like a collusion. The reason they're given is that I think I touched on this last time about the Sandy Hook killing and how for a while he thought it was an inside job, you know, a controlled plan to bring in, you know, gun confiscations and stuff. Yeah. But I don't know. It seems very strange to me that they're saying, you know, they don't want them on any platform. They don't want anyone paying them any money, and they don't want his voice out there. You know, ISIS have Twitter accounts. You know, the KKK have Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
Alex Jones, no, you're deplatformed. I think it's very strange.
I think it is here. I've actually just Googled Bohemian Grove. I always like to have a laptop in front of me so we can, you know, do stuff on the fly.
The footage, I'll put it on the show notes anyway.
Oh, yeah, we got to see that. But actually, Bohemian Grove, people have actually given it, has 3.5 stars.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is during the day, but
wait till you hear, like, here's some of the comments, right? There's like 284 reviews, some of the comments here. Don't know much about this place, but was in an area on vacation, decided to drive around. I do know it's real. Large parking lot with lots of cars, digital speed traps, signs, and small no outlet street, sheriff blocking entrance, European sports cars everywhere. Something is going down. Got an overall creepy vibe. Another one just says, God is the greatest. One day Satan worships will regret. May God save me from the hellfire. Amazing.
Well, that's what the Illuminati is. Yeah. Is we can talk about that now because it was another story.
There's a classy one. I had a great time opening a cold body with the boys. Great time overall. Best part is when we sacrificed the moms for some free V-books. Just I went there because I thought it was an Ill Uzi Bird concert and featured Despacho 8. When I tried to get in, a guard that goes by the name of weird name stopped me and politely asked me to get the hell out of there before I was
because after Alex Jones snuck in, they beefed up security to keep anyone else from snooping.
Yeah, I mean, these things though, I mean, look, whatever goes on there. But these things do happen. There are meetings of the sort where the great and good, inverted commas, show up and they meet and they you know, they get somebody on board, or they pick, you know, all the power meetings, they happen everywhere, all over the place, and the conference.
Yeah, the Bilderberg meetings is another one where all the leaders of the world get together, but it's all private, like, so it's all off the books.
Prime ministers and all of that. That's how you get all these deals going, and all of a sudden there's a trade deal being announced with a country. Where the fuck did that come from? It's all over these sort of things. Right? Yeah. Frank, what do you make? I know you love a good old conspiracy theory like the next man, you know. What do you think of our Alex? We're going to call him a friend. We love you, Alex. You know,
I'm not too familiar with the guys they're speaking about. I do actually like conspiracy theories, but I've never really heard of this guy, and it's probably unlikely now I'll be able to access any of his content. He's been silent. But like, I think I was saying to you guys before, I don't know if you've ever seen that film. It's called, like, I think it's called Say Nothing. It's about the Hulk Hogan, his trial with Gawker.
What was that about? Was it so racism or something? Was it?
Well, no. Well, yeah. There was, I don't know if you have the internet there, don't you? You can bring up the synopsis of the film. I think it's called Say Nothing. But essentially, do you remember the Hulk Hogan sex tape was leaked?
I will never get the image of seeing Hulk Hogan's monstrous dick fully erected.
I've never had the pleasure of seeing him.
You could have launched like a fucking biker jacket with all the metal titanium plates in that bad boy, and it still would have fucking held it up. My God, I'll never be able to watch the WWE Network again. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I do remember it.
Yeah, but he was taking on Gawker at the time, and it was a huge legal battle, and like the fee is like, I think you know, the
nobody
the
speak
that, yeah nobody speak that's it the fees that were involved, like Gawker's lawyers were starting to think, like, hang on, there's someone else behind this, like, there's no way one man can, or, you know, someone, Hulk Hogan can be funding this. And as it turned out, Peter Thiel, who I think, I don't know if you can Google Peter Thiel there, don't you? I think he founded one of the companies in Silicon Valley. I can't remember which one. But he had a run-in with Gawker a few years previously about a personal issue. And he basically just wanted to take them out. So he was funding Hulk Hogan's whole lawsuit against them. And what they did at one stage was basically they were suing Gawker on a load of charges, essentially, and Gawker's insurance would have covered them all because it triggered some kind of liability thing. But they actually dropped that case against them so that Gawker's insurance company wouldn't cover it, so that Gawker themselves would have to cover it, so they'd run them out of business. So, you know, I'm not surprised, you know, when you hear things about people.
It was actually to do with Gawker. I'm looking here at Wikipedia. So I think find a short notice, but it said that Thiel said he was motivated to sue Gawker after he published a 2007 article publicly outing him, headlined "Peter Thiel is totally gay." People, this stated that Gawker articles about others, including his friends, had ruined people's lives for no reason, and said it's less about revenge and more about specific deterrence. So in response to the criticism that his funding of lawsuits against Gawker restricted freedom of the press, Thiel cited his donations to the Committee to Protect Journalists and stated, "I refuse to believe that journalism means massive privacy violations. I think much more highly of journalists than that. It's precisely because I respect journalists that I do not believe they are endangered by fighting back against Gawker." There you go.
So, like, I mean, I know we spoke about this before, like, but, you know, there's a real threat to kind of the free press at the moment and the freedom of speech. Now, look, obviously what Gawker did outing someone, you know, isn't nice.
No.
That's like, you know, you can understand him being annoyed. But, you know, the really powerful people in the world have the ability to kind of shut you down. And, you know, particularly people who run the main media and social networking companies, they really, for the most part, run the world. I think I said before, they're called FANG or something like that. It's like Facebook, Amazon, can't remember what the N stands for, and then Google. I think it is like it's Net Boys or something like that. But, you know, so although Alex Jones probably seems like a raving madman, like, you know, he, as you said, Sean, he could be getting close to something, or he could have just annoyed the wrong person and they just said to their buddy, here, will you kick him off your platform? You know what I mean?
Cause yeah.
It's as simple as that, really. Like,
yeah,
I always think, though, like, surely, companies shouldn't be able to just kick you off without a valid reason, like, you know.
Well, so they get them on the likes of hate speech, you know, because right. If you're, say, a conspiracy theory, they can just say, look, it's you're roiling people up about this. That's their reason. That kind of has them covered anyway, you know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's their platform, though, isn't it? They can do what they want, I'd imagine.
It is. But like, they're kind of, like, if you take Google, like, when was the last time you fucking Yahooed something or Binged something? You know, it's...
Yeah, it's Google,
yes,
isn't
they
it?
They are private companies, but if they're, you know, kicking people off for what they believe or whatever, they should come out and say that and say, right, if you believe this thing or you believe in conspiracy theories, we won't, and you know, outright say that. If you believe this, you know, you're not welcome on this platform. And then people can know that ahead of time and say, well, I'm not building up a following, a fan base, you know, yeah, on YouTube or whatever, and then have the rug pulled out from underneath me. You know, if that was the case, there'd be a lot of people would leave those platforms and say, all right, there's other stuff out there. You know, there's alternatives to everything. It's just
Dailymotion,
the big boys at the moment. Yeah, exactly. You know,
poor man's YouTube.
There's all sorts of things out there that could facilitate them, but obviously YouTube is the biggest fucking thing.
Yeah.
The first thing you're going to go to is YouTube. But
I used to love YouTube. I still do love YouTube. I mean, we all use it, but I used to love it. I remember when I started, and a good friend of mine introduced me to it, and I was getting tired of the internet, and I remember just saying, this is a game changer, you know. And then at first they were shutting it down, they were taking videos off it, no, you can't be. But then people embraced it, people like WWE and all that, and they were like, no, let's give away matches, let's get people on there, and U2, and people were uploading like full concerts onto it. Oh, it was amazing. Like, and seeing some old ads and stuff. Speaking of the Illuminati, you shared another story with us, Sean. I read it and then I had to read it again, and I thought, what? Just tell us what it was about.
It was Beyonce's former drummer accused her of not only being one of, now she's widely rumored to be a member of this Illuminati group, but she also used witchcraft on him. What was it? The details of it, I actually can't remember, but yeah, that she was a witch.
It was a former drummer, and she alleged in this lawsuit, which obviously got thrown out, that she, where is it? Beyonce accused, now it's in a Rolling Stone magazine. So here, I'll just read it out for people. According to Rolling Stone, husband Jay-Z has been plagued by rumors of a link to the Illuminati, a fictional secret society comprised of the intellectual and social elite since the 1990s, and Beyonce is implicated. So obviously, this former drummer has come out and said Beyonce has been accused of extreme witchcraft to control former drummer. And according to Newsweek, Kimberly Thompson, that's the girl's name, who was Beyonce's drummer for 7 years, has taken out a restraining order against the Lemonade singer. I thought it was the other way around, but okay. She used extreme witchcraft to control her life, tap her finances, and her phones. Why would Beyonce be tapping anybody for their finances? George,
can you give a restraining order against witchcraft anyway? You don't have to be in the same room. Like,
Exactly. What's a restraining order going to do? You know, just get like a lock of hair or a fucking, I don't know. Just denied it. There's all these things. Rolling Stone go on about, you know, this alleged Illuminati thing that Rolling Stone says believers point to a triangle hand symbol the couple have been seen making, and a video for Bass 2008 single Ladies, which allegedly contains hidden messages when played backwards. To the evidence, in advert comments, it's not exactly definitive, but the rumors persist. Beyonce even references them in the song Formation.
It's kind of like they play up. I think if you're rumored to be in it, a lot of them sort of play up to it. Like that hand symbol, you know, that symbol of the, it's on the dollar bill of like a pyramid.
Yeah.
But the tip of it is separated and there's an eye in the middle. That's the all seeing eye, and that's supposed to represent that you're part of this club, this select few and the rest of us underneath are just the yes. schmubs, you know.
So, I mean, I'm just looking through here. So, of course, when I read that, I thought, well, I have to see who else is allegedly in the Illuminati. And allege, I just want to make this very clear.
It's your mate, Anna.
Yeah, by my favorite word in the whole dictionary. Just gets to disappear. On a PlayStation 4 does. So, basically, these are members. This is according to Ranker.com. Or-A-N-K-W-E-R. I never heard of them before, but here are members. Apparently, Angelina Jolie is allegedly a member. Paris Hilton. Yeah, Britney Spears, Kim Kardashian, Rihanna. I'd imagine that would be Kanye West as well. Halle Berry, Beyonce.
Sounds like the kind of club you want to be in.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, you've got people. Oh, Jesus, like talentless, limited people that have somehow become major stars. Miley Cyrus, Madonna. There have been rumors about Madonna.
It's just a list of famous people, isn't it?
Yeah, probably see Barack Obama, George Bush, of course. Who else is on here? Hitler apparently was a member of the Illuminati. Lady Gaga. Oh man, Justin Bieber, Jay-Z. Yeah, we mentioned him. Jackson, actually, that's Stalin, Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, mostly presidents. It just goes on, man. Dick Cheney, JFK, Alicia Keys. Speaking of Michael Jackson, I remember people saying that about him. I know some of Jackson's fans are absolutely obsessed that the Illuminati killed Jackson. Looking here on CNN Entertainment.
Why would they kill him though? What would be?
I don't know. I thought. Well, I suppose he. I don't know. I mean, just reading here, Michael Jackson often cried after talking to AEG live executives as he prepared for his comeback concert. His oldest son testified Wednesday. After he got off the phone, these are quotes. He would cry. Prince Jackson testified. He would say, "They're going to kill me. They're going to kill me." His father told me he was talking about AEG live CEO Randy Phillips and his ex-manager. Dr. Tom, Prince said. Yeah, so I don't know. It's a very muddled article. But apparently, yeah, he's convinced that the Illuminati were going to kill him, and he did.
So what do you reckon? Do you think they exist or they're a figment of our imagination?
I don't know. Frank, you're normally the voice of reason these things.
No, not a chance.
You're a member.
Not a chance.
You're a member. Aren't you?
Well, I would say a lot of
you know what the fourth rule is?
Deny it.
The same as the fourth rule of Fight Club.
No, yeah. One must not talk about Fight Club. One must not mention about Fight Club. I don't know. It's all mental. But I do think Alex Jones is onto something. There's something not quite right there. I mean, you know when you said Alex Jones to me a few weeks ago? I didn't know who this guy was, Sean. I thought you meant the Welsh bird off The One Show.
Right. Well, no, he's someone who, when I was younger, I was kind of more interested in conspiracies and stuff, but he would be like the head honcho for conspiracies.
I like a good L of conspiracy. It's a bit of, it makes you think, you know, and things should make you think. You shouldn't take everything for face value, you know. Speaking of face value,
keep an eye on him anyway.
We will, because I'm sure he'd be banned from something else. He'd probably be banned from whatever he's banned from, I'm sure we'll keep you up to date. Alex Watch.
Imagine Yahoo banned him. He'd be like, gives a fuck. He'd
be like, what was the really old shit one? Netspace. You know, it was
like you're banned from Netspace.
Oh, yeah, shit. You know, Netflix, Internet Explorer. Take that. Yeah, no one cares about you anymore. Speaking of weird stuff. Dalai Lama came out during the week and he made a controversial comment. His Holiness, he's the 13th Dalai Lama, I believe. And he basically said, I wish Lux he was on this week, actually. No, he didn't say that. But he probably said it about me not being on last week. I'm sure he's a listener, Dalai Lama, if you're listening. Hello. He told him
about the Illuminati.
Maybe it could be Luna. I'm sure if they are out there, Sean, I'm sure they're listening to us. but anyway, the Dalai Lama, I can't even say his fucking name. He was in Sweden during the week. And of course, Sweden had its election, and apparently the Swedish Democratic Party, who are quite, you know, pro-nationalist and all this kind of stuff, they have a very anti-immigration policy. They've made some gains. Of course, Sweden's had its own issues with immigration, and there's been allegedly several attacks that have been silenced by the mainstream media.
Oh, yeah.
In Sweden and all that stuff. And the same in Germany and other places, you know. But, anyway, we won't get into that. But he turned around and said at a press conference, he said that Europe is for Europeans, basically, and Africa is for Africans and all this kind of stuff. Basically saying that refugees, when they, you know, they get sorted out, they should go back to the country they've come from and help get the country back on its own two feet. Now, this was, of course, it's 2018, so you can't even look at anyone sideways without somebody getting offended these days. I don't really see from that statement too much, offense to it, really. Frank, what do you make of the whole thing? You're a good old liberal lefty. You love all that sort of stuff. Did you find the Dalai Lama's comments offensive or hypocritical?
I think the issue is, like, from reading the comments, that, like, if you took that comment on face value that Europe is for the Europeans and kind of scaled it back to say, well, if I said Ireland is for the Irish, you know, would that be, you know, an offensive line? It probably could be construed that way. I think his sentiment was that once the refugees acquire skills and maybe money and things like that, they should possibly then return home and kind of teach people about these skills and develop, you know, schools or whatever over in their own country in the hope of building up that, you know, different societies. If that's what he meant, then no, that's not offensive. You know, that's kind of what a lot of spiritual people do. You know, you give a man a fish, he eats today. You teach a man to fish, he eats for life. You know, if that's what he was trying to, if that was the reasoning behind what he was saying, then no, that's not offensive. That's his spiritual belief and things like that. However, if you take the words, and I don't know if it was miscommunicated, that Europe is for the Europeans, well, that's just a silly comment, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was in The Independent that I read it. He's also made comments about this before. In 2016 in Germany, he says, speaking to German reporters in 2016, he said, Europe, for example, Germany cannot become an Arab country. Germany is Germany. There are so many that in practice it becomes difficult. From a moral point of view, too, I think that the refugees should only be admitted temporarily. So that would actually, some people go, oh, that's outrageous. But that's actually solidifying your argument there, Frank, isn't it? Or, you know, that whole thing that it's just temporary. Get back on your own two feet and go home and then get your own country back on its own two feet.
If it's possible, like, I mean, I'm sure if there was the opportunity to prosper in your own homeland, then, you know, without any threat, then I'm not sure why anyone would want to leave their own country. Like, you know, but you have to, you know, sometimes go forward refill to make a life for yourself. And, you know, if countries that are more fortunate than where a lot of these refugees have to flee from, if we can provide them with shelter, if we can provide them with education, if we can provide them with funding, you know, to take home and, you know, as we said, build up their societies, then they're not, you know, they we're not going to have a refugee crisis. But, you know, look, we could talk all night about the reasons for refugee crisis and things like that. But yeah, like, if his thoughts are, well, you should take these skills and bring them back to your homeland and help people who haven't been as fortunate to escape, then I don't have a particular problem with that. Like, you know, I think that's a nice sentiment. Maybe it's a bit far-fetched, but, you know, it's a nice sentiment that people would return home and take the skills and the money that they've acquired and try and build up their own land.
Well, the Irish did it for years, you know. Yeah. The amount of people, I know you hear some English people moaning about it now, and, you know, I've got my finger on the pulse, so to speak, and you hear people giving out about Polish and Africans like earning money over here and then sending it to come home. We did it for years. Some of us still do it. But yeah, I do think that I agree with the Dalai Lama, with His Holiness, should we say. But I mean, looking here at the Independent, I mean, I looked at the Independent side reporting this, and I've looked at the Daily Mail, Luxie's favorite newspaper. one's left and one's right. And you read, it's like you get both sides of the argument, and somewhere in the middle, it's true. You know, so that's what I like to do. But that concept is lost on Luxie, because he's foreign, bless him. But someone's comment here, I mean, this is sort of nonsense that you hear, right? So Sabina Basha on Twitter turns around and goes, Dali is a bigot of the first order. The Tibetan spiritual leader, the Dalai Lama, told non-Indians in Malmo that refugees should return to their native countries to rebuild them. Should the Dalai Lama, Christ's sakes, can't even say the fucker's name, not lead by example. Should His Holiness not lead by example by returning to Tibet? Yeah, the only issue with that is, Sabina Basha, he can't go back to his native land, because if he does, he'll never be seen or heard from again. So obviously, I'd imagine he's not saying that if you come from a war-torn country, you have to go back there now. Sorry, but you know, your 2 weeks are here. You need to go back. No, obviously, he's saying when it calms down, you go back. And I think that is correct. That is right. We should educate these people. We should teach them values. Well, I think anyway. I mean, obviously, you hold on to your own values, and we should send them back richer, fuller knowledge, better situation than they were in when they came. And then hopefully, through aid, help rebuild the country. I think that's what should happen in an ideal world. It won't happen. But I mean, here's another one. Dalai Lama, Europe belongs to Europeans. Refugees should go home. That's not what he said. See, I hate that. That's not what he said. You know, Mr. Lama, where were you when these European countries bombarded these Muslim countries and destroyed everything? Bloody hypocrite and bootlicker. Unbelievable. Yeah, it's just... Yeah, he lives in northern India. That's where he is. It's just, unfortunately, everyone just wants to be outraged these days. But I think the world's gone mad anyway. But speaking of mad bastards, there was an incident in Manchester where basically, it was on the Daily Mail. I read it. I love it. I love these little stories, you know, goes to show you what sort of crazy country I live in. It starts with the headline, lads. Follow me in it. This is true. A teacher who hit airport official with his car in road rage row over £3 drop-off fee avoids jail because judge agrees charges are an absolute disgrace. Basically, a judge refused to jail a teacher because he agreed that the £3 drop-off charge was too much, it was excessive and all this stuff. So what happened was he basically dropped somebody off. The car park attendant said, right, that's £3. And he's gone, nope. I'm not paying that. This is an outrage. Well, sorry, mate, you have to pay it. No, I'm not paying it. Well, you have to pay it. No, not paying it. Right, fuck you then. And drove off with the car park attendant on the bonnet. eventually, he got off the car. I just think of your man in Father Ted. You know, when he jumps on the bonnet of the car and they're driving and he's bollock naked. But anyway, so he drives off and he goes flying off the car and the teacher drives away, and then basically he's stopped by the police like half a mile down the road. They arrest him, the whole lot, goes to court, and yeah, the judge basically says, so this is what the judge said about it anyway. He said, although it is no excuse for dangerous driving, I think that it is an absolute disgrace that people cannot deliver people to airports without paying an extraordinary amount. The judge continued, actually, this is the courtroom, he says, I was dropping up my cousin at the airport on Sunday and I was warned by my sister that the airport charges had been introduced, so I looked for a sign when I arrived. But if I did not know, I might not have seen it. The airport already makes a lot of money and does not need to charge £3 for people to drop people off. My sister warned me, this is the judge, by the way, in the courtroom giving the sentence, and my sister warned me that by the time you have got to the front, you are allowed just minutes or seconds and they start charging you more. I saw a troop of elderly people who had been dropped off away from the airport trying to avoid these unjust charges. These were not young joggers. They were elderly people who had to be dropped off some distance away from the airport. After the hearing, Manchester Airport said it was appalled by the judge's comments and attitude towards determining suitable punishment for criminal driving. Bembo, the guy who was charged, he's actually a psychology teacher at one of the girls' scrabble schools, went over a roundabout before eventually stopping for the police before the M56 motorway. The unnamed airport official was uninjured in the incident, but said he genuinely believed he could die from falling off the bonnet. The judge told Benbow, "I quite understand why you lost your rag and completely flipped in the way you did, but judges have to uphold the regulations that authorities at the airports are entitled to up their levy from time to time. I have to make it clear to everyone that they must not lose their temper. That does not retract from the fact that this was a very dangerous driving and that you did was and what you did was very reckless and dangerous. You were not driving at a great speed, but it's wrong to drive along with someone on the bonnet of your car. He was trying to call your bluff and you were trying to call his bluff, and I expect you were both enraged at the time. I accept that this was totally out of character." What do you make of that?
I think it's funny how the judge agrees with a guy who basically ran someone over.
That's fucking mental.
Obviously, £3 for a pickup charge is mental. Like, what are you doing, Charlie? And it was actually, it was even more than that. I think it was £5 if you were over 10 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, £3 for 5 minutes, £10.
That's extortionate. And I agree with the judge. You should be allowed to run over people if they're charging you £10.
What do you reckon, Frank? You're the only one here that drives, Frank.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I mean, you know, is 5 minutes, like, you have up to 5 minutes for free, do you?
No, it's £3 for 5 minutes. And then if you're over 5 minutes, it's £5 for 10 minutes. And it's probably even more after that.
Yeah, keep going.
I mean, that, like, if that is the case, then that's ridiculous. Because, you know, I could understand if they said, right, if you're there for over 5 minutes, it's £3. Because, you know, in an airport, you can't have people hanging around. You need to drop them and go. But at the same time, like, you know, I think it must have been terrifying for the guy that was run over, like, you know what I mean?
Oh, but you know what, though? It's like, you could just see it, can't you? I ain't gonna run you over. Go for it. And then he just tried to go, fuck it then. And the guy goes off with a bloke on his bonnet. I love it. It's like, you must have been, you know, you cannot drive away with people on your bonnet. Oh, fantastic. I saw something like that before in Leakslip. I used to work in Leakslip for a short time. And there was like a rich local councillor, and there was building works going on, and he refused. Like, he was way up the road, you know. It was like a one way. They were caught. Basically, there was only space for one vehicle, and I mean, the truck really. He should have just let the truck go in, because the truck was farther up the road than the councillor was, or he looked like a councillor. He looked like a wealthy businessman. And I'll never forget it when he was just like, I'm not moving, you have to move. And then the guy, he goes, you'll have to run me over. And the guy starts revving up his truck, and he like jumps out, fucking do it then, you fucker, like that. I fucking dare you. And then I remember the truck driver just took out a newspaper and started reading it. Yeah, it's just like, oh my God. I remember just looking at this, like, breakfast roll, just looking at these two, going, wow. I don't know what happened in the end. I'm probably still there now. But anyway, lads, I think that sums it up for this week. Thanks very much for coming on. I hope you guys have a good week. Frank, hopefully you don't get Return of the Turbo Trots. And we'll do this again. It's been emotional.
Get up the yard.